Good morning. Today is Monday, May 9th, 2022. Welcome to the Tax Committee. The Tax Committee is in order. Just a little bit of a roadmap ahead. First, members, if I could ask you to keep the documents that are in your folder, that would be the bill, the summary, the fiscal tracking sheet. We'll want to be using those tomorrow rather than needing to do all of that reprinting this evening. So if you can hang on to those documents, that'll be incredibly helpful. For this hybrid hearing, of course, members know, the public knows that all of these documents are available online at the senate.mn. Go to the calendar for the day and just go down to the Tax Committee. You'll see all of our documents online as well. Now today, we are going to do a walkthrough of the amendment, the A1 amendment, which tomorrow we will be hearing testimony for and taking amendments and then amending, replacing the House File 3669 with the Senate language. So that's kind of just a lay of the land. I'm glad to have you with us today, either online or in person. Love to see you all here in the beautiful G15. So members, we're going to go ahead and start then with the delete all, which is, should, if you're looking at documents, it should be the SCH 3669 A1. And we'll ask Ms. Pollack to go through that delete all. And then also we'll then follow with Mr. Wilms, who will go through the fiscal tracking spreadsheet, which you also should have in your packets and online. So, Ms. Pollack, to the bill.
Madam Chair and members, I'll begin by going through the first three articles, and then Mr. Sylvia and Mr. Arneson will also be walking through the remaining articles in the delete everything amendment.
Oh, and Ms. Pollack, I should mention, we'll stop briefly after each article if members have questions. So, thank you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, Article 1 is the federal update, and this is the exact same language and article as in the first tax bill that the committee heard last month and that was adopted on the floor. Again, this article conforms to a number of federal provisions over the last few years and provides for a one-time reconciliation of the non-conforming items during those years. Beginning with Article 2, this is the income and estate article. Section 1 is Chair Nelson's Senate File 1314, which allocates an additional $7 million for the Angel Investment Credit for tax year 2022. Sections 2, 17, and 22 are Chair Nelson's Senate File 3879, the New Markets Tax Credit. Sections 3 and 5 are also from Chair Nelson, Senate File 3590, modifying the definitions of income, qualifying entity, and qualifying owner for the pass-through entity or PTE tax. That's, those sections also add a requirement for partnerships that were subject to federal audit. Federal audit and adjustment that the partnerships must file an amended PTE report for all direct partners included in the PTE return in the reviewed year and pay any additional amount that had been due had federal adjustments been reported properly. Sections 4, 19, 20, and 21 are Senator Coleman's file, Senator Coleman's bill, Senate File 3671. And these sections strike obsolete language regarding the phased-in estate tax exclusion amount, and these also allow a surviving spouse an additional subtraction for purposes of calculating the surviving spouse's taxable estate equal to the lesser of $3 million or the deceased spouse unused exclusion amount. Section 6 is Chair Nelson's provision to increase the amounts of the K-12 subtraction from $1,625 for each qualifying child in grades 1 through 6 to $3,250 and from $2,500 to $5,000 for each qualifying child in grades 7 to 12. And those amounts are adjusted annually for inflation. Section 7 is Senate File 2637, Chair Nelson's provision to allow a full subtraction of taxable Social Security benefits You'll remember that this item was also in the first tax bill from last month. Sections 8 and 18 are Senator Howe's Senate File 3538 to provide a subtraction of pension income received by individuals receiving that income from a state fire and police pension plan, a local or state correctional service plan, or the state patrol pension plan, or any benefit or annuity from a similar pension, a federal pension plan, if that individual has reached age 55 before December 31st of 2022 and has attained at least 20 years of service. Section 9 is Senator Pratt's file, Senate File 3642, allowing nuclear decommissioning reserve funds to be exempt from Minnesota income tax, effective in tax year 2025. Section 10 is Chair Nelson's provision to reduce the first tier income tax rate from 5.35% to 2.8%. This was also a provision in the first tax bill from last month. Section 11 updates the statutory year for the inflation requirement under current law. Section 12 reflects provisions in Senator Pratt's Senate File 4205 and Chair Nelson's Senate File 77 to increase the income level at which the dependent care credit begins to phase out from $52,230 to $70,000. Section 13 is Senator Rest's file, Senate File 2977, to modify the definition of income for purposes of the K-12 credit to federal adjusted gross income, and also increase the income threshold at which the credit begins to phase out from $33,500 to $50,000. Section 14 is a modification to Chair Nelson's bill, Senate File 930, to increase the second tier of the research and development credit from 4% to 4.25%. Section 15 includes a provision from Senator Senjum's bill, Senate File 3849, to allow a recipient of the Historic Structure Rehabilitation Credit to assign the credit in whole to an assignee. Section 16 is Senator Coleman's bill, Senate File 4394, to provide tax credits for small businesses who provide paid family leave benefits. Section 24 is a repealer, and this reflects a few provisions. The first is Chair Nelson's provision to repeal the add-back for Section 529 savings plan distributions that were used for elementary and secondary school tuition. This would effectively conform to that TCA provision that allowed these distributions. The repealer also repeals the definition of income for the K-12 credit, which requires certain non-taxable and other income to be added back. The changes to FAGI for purposes of determining eligibility. Since the measure of income is changed to FAGI earlier in the bill, the definition is no longer necessary. And this was a provision in Senator Rest's bill, Senate File 2977 as well. And then finally in the repealer is a provision in bills from Chair Nelson and Senator Senjum, which repeals the sunset of the Historic Structure Rehabilitation Credit, and repealing the sunset effectively retains the credit on an ongoing basis. Madam Chair, that concludes Article 2.
Thank you. Members online or present, any comments or questions? We've all heard these before. All right, let's move on to Article 3. Thank you, Ms. Pauley.
Madam Chair and members, Article 3 is the sales and use tax article. Sections 1, 2, and 3 are from Senator Bach's bill, Senate File 2558, to provide that the sale of taxable food and beverages for consumption in a private suite, skybox, or private box seat, or for a preferred seating location at a collegiate event does not invalidate the exemption under current law the sale of a license to use one of those suites, skyboxes, private box seats, or the right to purchase the privilege of admission at a college athletic event in a preferred viewing location. This section also provides that amenities included in the privilege of admission are exempt if they're purchased by the taxpayer who sells the privilege of admission. Sections 4 and 6 are from Senator Rarick's bill, Senate File 3375, providing a sales tax exemption for fencing material used on agricultural property, as well as materials and supplies used or consumed in and equipment incorporated into the construction or repair or replacement of farm fencing material. Section 5 comes from Senator Rosen's bill, Senate File 1462, providing a sales tax exemption for purchases made by an animal shelter used directly in rescuing, sheltering, and finding homes for unwanted animals. The section also exempts from sales tax the sale or adoption of animals and the sale of associated animal supplies by an animal shelter. And finally, this section exempts sales made by and events run by an animal shelter for fundraising purposes, including the sale of prepared food, candy, soft drinks at a fundraising event, subject to certain limits, as they appeared in the bill as we heard it. Finally, Section 7 provides a sales tax exemption for fees related to natural gas sold to residential customers during the polar vortex in February 2021 that are applied to customers' billing statements in the non-exempt months of May to October. Madam Chair, that concludes Article 3.
Thank you. Any questions, comments, members? All right, we'll move on to Article 4. Ms. Pollack. Oh, Mr. Sylvia.
Madam Chair, members, I will be going through Article 4, property taxes. Section 1 is from Senator Bach, Senate File 3451, and this provides either a property tax exemption or a 50% net tax capacity reduction for a certain airport property. Section 2 is from Senator Chamberlain, Senate File 4158, and this extends a property tax exemption for a certain tribal-owned property in the city of Minneapolis. Sections 3 and 4 are from Senator Weber's Senate File 3467 that establishes a time-limited property tax exemption for energy storage systems. I will skip Section 5 right now and discuss that in greater detail when I get to Section 9. Section 6 is from Senator Weber's Senate File 3706, and this sets the first-tier valuation limit for agricultural homestead property. Sections 7, 8, and 11 all make changes to Class 4D low-income rental housing. Section 11 itself reduces the class rate to 0.25 for all Class 4D properties. Section 7 requires that a property owner receive approval by the governing body of a city or town before applying to the Housing Finance Agency for initial Class 4D designation for new properties only. In Class Section 8 is a conforming change that requires that additional approval requirement for the application itself. Sections 5, 9, and 14 are from Senator Bach, Senate File 3200. These sections establish a new affordable housing market value exclusion program. Section 10 is from Senator Rood, Senate File 1476, and this modifies the classification tier rates for Class 1C Ma and Pa homestead resort properties. Section 12 is a combination of Senator Lang, Senate File 2681, and Senator Howes, Senate File 4021. This section makes changes to the Disabled Veterans Homestead Market Value Exclusion by allowing surviving spouses to have additional time for a first-time applicant, and also to reapply if the spouse previously qualified for the exclusion, but the exclusion expired prior to legislative action that extended the eligibility time period to a potential lifetime benefit. Section 13 is from Senator Ress, Senate File 3192. But what appears in Section 13 is enhanced exclusion amounts. This section increases by approximately 25%, both the minimum and maximum market value thresholds for the homestead market value exclusion. Section 15 is from Senator Weber, Senate File 3898, and this modifies the definition of attachments and appurtenances of cooperative utility distribution lines. Section 16, the Property Tax Subcommittee heard three bills concerning the state general levy, but what appears in Section 16 is a reduction, one-time reduction of the state general levy for both commercial industrial property and seasonal rec property by a combined $23 million for taxes payable in 2023 to 2025. And then beginning in taxes payable 2026, both levies are reduced by 10%. Until the levies are zero for taxes payable in 2035. Section 17 adds the affordable housing market exclusion from Section 9 to the property tax statement, as well as an agricultural riparian buffer credit that Mr. Arneson will discuss later to the property tax statement as well. Sections 18 and 19 from Senator Osmick, Senate File 2764, and this eliminates the 10% minimum on interest rates charged for delinquent property taxes, penalties, and interest and confessions of judgment, and also authorizes county boards to establish by resolution a lower interest rate. Section 20 is from Senator Klein, Senate File 2929, and this makes changes to the additional or targeting property tax refund by reducing the overall percent threshold to qualify and increasing the maximum refund allowed. Sections 21 through 24 are a combination of Senator Klein, Senate File 3184, and Senator Murphy, Senate File 3803. These sections make changes to the Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program by increasing the maximum household income allowed and reducing the homestead ownership and occupancy requirement. And lastly, Madam Chair, members, Section 25 is from Senator Tomasoni, Senate File 3765, that authorizes the City of Virginia an exemption from the overall limit on a city's net debt limit. And Madam Chair, members, that concludes a walkthrough of Article 4, Property Taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Members, any comments, questions? We will move on then to Article 5, which I believe would be Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair, members, Article 5 is the Property Tax Aids and Credits Article. Section 1 proposes an agricultural riparian buffer credit. This is from Senator Goggins' Bill 2868. The amount of the credit would be equal to the amount of the net tax capacity tax payable on qualifying buffer acres. Sections 2, 3, and 4 are all conforming changes to Section 1, that Goggin buffer credit proposal. Section 5 proposes an electric generation transition aid. This is proposed originally by Senator Housley in Senate File 3641, and the amount of the aid would be a function of the tax rate and net tax capacity attributable to retiring electric generation units in qualifying municipalities. The amount of the aid would phase out over a period of 20 years. Section 6 relates to reimbursements to various taxing jurisdictions in Mille Lacs County. This is from a Senator Matthews bill, Senate File 3069. And it proposes to compensate jurisdictions for property placed into trust by the United States Department of Interior, Bureau of Indian Affairs. Section 7 is from Senator Weber's Senate File 3945 that Mr. Sylvia discussed earlier. This section in particular proposes a two-year transition aid for cities in which the net tax capacity of Class 40 low-income rental property exceeds a certain threshold amount. Sections 8 through 12 all relate to aid penalty forgiveness for various cities for their local government aid and small cities assistance aid payments. Section 8 proposes to forgive the penalty levied on the City of Roosevelt for their 2019 aids. This is from a Senator Johnson bill, Senate File 1052. Section 9 and 10 are both from Senator Eichhorn. Section 9 relates to the City of Bena, and again proposes to forgive the city its withheld pay 2021 LGA and Small Cities Assistance aid payments. That's from Senate File 4535. Section 10 is Senate File 4532, again from Senator Eichhorn, proposing to forgive the aid penalty on the City of Boy River for their 2021 LGA and Small Cities Assistance aid payments. Sections 11 and 12 are both from Senator Dames. Section 11 is from Senate File 2788 and proposes to forgive the aid penalty for the City of Echo for their 2021 LGA and Small Cities Assistance aid payments. And finally, Section 12 relates to the City of Morton and again proposes to forgive the penalty for that city for their 2021 LGA and Small Cities Assistance aid payments. And Madam Chair, that concludes Article 5.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Are you also going to do the public finance, Article 6? I do see a question. Senator Dietze.
Let me turn my camera on here. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Mr. Arneson. Can you do a property tax? Will we see a property tax run on the impacts of the phase out of the CI and of all the transition aid and the different aids in here?
Mr. Arneson.
The net reductions for business and residential and property taxes?
Madam Chair and Senator Dietzick, yeah, I'd be glad to provide what is available. The Property Tax Committee did see a combined run showing the combined effects of certain selected items, but I'll work with you to make sure that the items you're particularly interested in are included in any run available for this committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson and Senator Dietzick. And then Article, I see no further questions. Oh, Mr. Sylvia.
Madam Chair and members, I will walk through briefly Article 6, Public Finance. This includes all six sections from Chair Nelson's Senate File 4284, the Public Finance Institute Bill. This extends from 10 to 20 years the duration limit for notes, certificates of indebtedness, and general obligation certificates issued by towns, cities, counties, and school districts. Under current law, these certificates and notes are payable not more than 10 years. The language also maintains that the equipment have a useful, expected useful life, at least equal to the terms of the notes issued. There were no changes made to the language of Senate File 4284, and they appear in this article in their entirety.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Article, no questions on that. We'll move on to Article 7, local sales taxes, and Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, the local sales tax article contains a couple of changes to general law that I'll outline first, and then as well as some changes to the local sales tax provisions from as we heard them in committee. Section 1 strikes the requirement in the general law that a ballot must include a separate question for each project that was authorized by the legislature and the related provisions to that requirement. It adds language to specify that the ballot question must state the project or projects proposed to be funded by the tax and the estimated length of time that the tax will be in effect. Section 2 is a clarifying section to clarify that a town or county, when the county board is acting as a town board with respect to an unorganized territory, may enter into an agreement with the commissioner to collect and administer a local lodging tax. The local sales tax authorizations included in this article are the same as were heard in committee. There are some clarifications and new provisions, however. First, sections 9 to 11 modify the Waite Park local sales tax that was authorized in last year's omnibus tax bill to allow the sales tax to be used to fund a regional corridor project, and the termination date of the tax is extended accordingly. Next, the Lake of the Woods County lodging tax authorization is clarified in section 19 to state that the authorization applies countywide, except for in the city of Baudette and any other city or town in the county that currently imposes a lodging tax under general law authority. And the lodging tax, the total lodging tax in the county must not exceed 3%. And then finally, Madam Chair, the committee heard several requests for increases to bonding authority for projects authorized in last year's tax bill. To respond to these requests and to respond to other increases that may arise due to updated construction estimates, the provision in Section 25 allows a temporary increase of up to 10% of costs for projects authorized in the 2021 omnibus tax bill. A local jurisdiction who seeks to exercise this authority must adopt an updated resolution reflecting the increased costs, and the ballot question must state the updated cost amount. And this provision, this temporary provision, would also apply to local sales taxes authorized this year if the local jurisdiction adopts a resolution approving the increased cost. Madam Chair, that concludes Article 7.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. Any comments or questions on the local option sales tax? Senator Bach.
Madam Chair and Ms. Pollack, I'm curious, a number of these local sales tax provisions have multiple projects. So, and now we're gonna change the law, hopefully, so that they don't have to ask individual questions for each project. So if a city that, let me use Black Duck, for example, have a number of one, two, three, four, five different projects. If in the process of kind of informing the public about the upcoming referendum on the ballot, they decide that there's a lot of opposition maybe to one of the projects, and that it might end up sinking the whole ballot question, is the cities have flexibility, so is this permissive language? Can they make a decision to go forward with a ballot initiative and maybe not include all five projects, maybe just include three, depending on the public feedback they get?
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach. Yes, the general law requires that a local jurisdiction can't include on the ballot any project that was not authorized by the legislature, but they have the flexibility to remove a project that was authorized by the legislature if they decide to do so.
Okay, thank you.
At election time.
Thank you, Senator Bach, for that clarification. Any further comments on the local option sales taxes? Okay. Then we have our Article 8, which is tax increment financing. I think that would be Mr. Sylvia.
Madam Chair and members, Article 8 is the tax increment financing article. Sections 1 through 4 and 6 through 12 are all from Senator Rest, Senate File 4086, which is a bill provided by the state auditor making clarifying technical changes to definition of administrative expenses, certain pooling percentage limitations, and violations. Section 5 is from Senator Nelson, Senate File 3159, and this would allow increment generated from an economic development district to be spent on a multi-level commercial facility in a small city, provided that the square feet of the first floor of the facility does not exceed 15,000 square feet, whereas under current law, the 15,000 square feet limitation would apply to the entire commercial facility. The last three sections, sections 13, 14, and 15, are all the city-specific TIF authorizations. Section 13 would authorize the City of Savage to extend by three additional years the five-year rule and the five-year period for enlargement, enlarging the area of the district. These districts were created pursuant to special legislation enacted in 2014. Section 14 would allow the City of Shakopee to create multiple TIF districts in a defined area of the city. Before establishing these districts, the city must find that 70% of the defined area has peat or other geotechnical difficulties, landfills, dumps, quarries, gravel pits, floodways, or substantial fill is required. If districts are established pursuant to this legislation, the five-year rule will be extended to 8 years. The permitted pooling percentage would be increased. And lastly, Madam Chair, members, Section 15 is from Senator Kent, Senate File 2976. This would authorize the City of Woodbury to extend by 5 years the duration of a TIF district in the city and also allow increment generated from that district to be spent outside the district on maintenance and facility upgrades to Central Park, and all expenditures are deemed to be expended on activities within the district. Madam Chair,
you.
Members, that concludes Article 8.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Any comments or questions on Article 8? Seeing none, then, we'll go to Mr. Arneson for Article 9, miscellaneous.
Madam Chair, Article 9 is a miscellaneous tax provisions article. Section 1 is a provision from the Chair modifying the requirements under Section 3.192 relating to bills that create, renew, or continue a tax expenditure. Members may know that under that current law, a bill creating, renewing, or continuing a tax expenditure must include a purpose statement and a standard against which the expenditure's effectiveness can be measured. The proposal here is to not require that statement be included in the bill text, but instead require the chairs of the House and Senate Taxes Committees to submit such information to the Tax Expenditure Review Commission following final enactment of such a bill. This section also eliminates the statutory requirement under Section 3.192 that a bill creating or continuing a tax expenditure must include an expiration date no more than 8 years from the enactment date. And finally, the section provides that the requirement that the chairs submit purpose statements to the Tax Expenditure Review Commission is not subject to judicial review. Section 2 is another chair's proposal that requires the Commissioner of Revenue to report on October 1st of each year to the chairs of the legislative taxes committees, listing each tax expenditure that would expire before July 1st of the following calendar year, absent legislative action. Section 3 is a proposal from the chair relating to periodic, non-periodic payments or distributions from employer-deferred compensation plans, individual retirement plans, and commercial annuities, including life insurance policies and the like. Members may recall that last year's special session tax bill made Minnesota an opt-out state relative to withholding from these kinds of payments. The chair is proposing that the withholding amount be a flat 6.25% rather than an amount determined by the payor under various withholding tax tables as if the distribution were a payment of wages. This will be effective for taxable years beginning after December 31, 2021. Section 4 relates to Section 5. They kind of come together here. Section 4 is the chair's proposal holding the appropriation for compulsive and problem gambling programs harmless against the reductions in the combined net receipts tax revenues that would be reduced under Section 5 of this article. And again, Section 5 modifies the tax brackets for the combined net receipts tax. The effect is to reduce the amount of net receipts tax revenue accruing to the state. This section will be effective for games reported as played after June 30, 2023. And finally, Section 6 also relates to the combined net receipts tax revenue, and it modifies the baseline gambling tax revenue amounts that are used to calculate the amount of the tax revenue that is transferred to the stadium reserve account in the general fund. And the adjustment proposed here would affect the amount of the transfer to the reserve account for fiscal years 2024 and later. Madam Chair, that concludes Article 9, miscellaneous.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. Any comments? Question? Senator Dietze.
Madam Chair.
I call on Senator Dietze. I'll call on you.
He can
next.
Go first.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Arneson, Section 3 of Article 9, withholding of 6.25%. So is that the floor, or can a taxpayer elect to actually take more than 6.25% off of their distribution?
Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair and Senator Bach, the language in the bill text, if you have the bill text in front of you, it's on page 154, line 9. I don't believe that section authorizes any alternative withholding amount, though Ms. Pollack may know whether a recipient, you know, in the normal way, as we're receiving wages, we can, you know, elect some additional withholding amount. Ms. Pollack may know whether these payments would also, you know, have that feature that the recipient could authorize some additional amount withheld.
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I don't know. I have a little bit of context on this provision that I'll look up quickly and see if I can get back to you on that question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's kind of important because if an individual decides they want to have deducted more than 6.25%, I don't know why we wouldn't allow that. So the language might need a little work.
Thank you, Senator Bach. We will get back to that, and we should have an answer even perhaps before we leave today, but certainly before tomorrow, so any clarification can be addressed. Thank you. And then Senator Dietze.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, I thought maybe you were going to ask about Section 1 in Article 9, and so that's why I was deferring to you. I know this kind of just flips what we did last year somewhat, but the big question I have, this is on the Tax Expenditure Review Commission. What is the impact of provides that the requirement that the House and Senate tax chairs submit purpose statements to the Review Commission is not subject to judicial review? How big of a I don't know off the top of my head how big of an issue that is and what that means. So kind of asking.
Thank you, Senator Dzietzik. I'll have Ms. Pollack add some more clarification to that, but you might remember there was some concern about some liability regarding the Tax Expenditure Commission, and so I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Pollack to further describe why this was a something that would help eliminate any legislative liability.
Madam Chair, Senator Dzietzik, there was concern or brought up an issue of concern that perhaps if a tax bill didn't have the language regarding an 8-year sunset requirement, or if the effective date of the language was just absent that requirement, there and along with the requirement that a tax expenditure sunset after 8 years, that it could be subject to challenge in the court system. So if, for example, the legislative intent was for a tax expenditure to be ongoing, someone could say, well, no, under 3.192 here, it was supposed to sunset after 8 years. And so this language is intended to strike that requirement, and the effect would be that the effective date is in legislation, you know, as it is stated in the legislation. So, for example, if it is intended to be ongoing beginning in a certain tax year, or it is expected to sunset after a short period of time, as we do from time to time, and then the as it pertains to the new language in paragraph A, that is simply to say that if for whatever reason the submission by the chairs to the Tax Expenditure Review Commission on the purpose statement is not submitted timely, for example, then the lack of that happening would not mean that a new tax expenditure is subject to judicial review.
Senator Dzietzik.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Pollack. That helps somewhat. And I know if Senator Russ were here today, she'd talk about she doesn't like purpose statements anyway, and we don't normally have them. But we do talk about legislative intent. And so if there is a court case, lots of times the judges, whomever, look at what is the intent, and did the legislators talk about intent. How does this statement impact intent, or does it impact intent when there, if there's a court case?
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, Senator Dzietzik, I think this provision would be something that a court would look at to intent by affirmatively saying that the requirements of this section are not subject to judicial review. I think that would just be kind of part of the calculation of a court decision, and it might be such that a court could say, well, this is what the statute says, that it's not subject to judicial review, and, you know, I suppose if there's some other reason that they might find to question the legislative intent or the enactment of the statute, they could go that route, but this would be one probably strong factor in that analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. And Senator Dzietzik, I was thinking of Senator Rest as well in our many, many discussions about not having purpose statements in law. And also that was causing a problem with other areas as well. So I think this way we'll have those purpose statements, those evaluative statements. They just won't be in law, but we'll make sure that they get to the review commission, which is where they need to be. All right. Let's see. Any further comments? Questions? Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, as I'm going through my notes here, I realize that I forgot to mention in Section 23 of Article 2 contains Senator Claussen's preceptor credit, which allows a refundable credit for an individual who qualifies as a preceptor, essentially serving as a mentor to a health profession student, meaning an advanced practice registered nurse, physician assistant, or mental health professional and who did not receive compensation for their preceptor services. And the credit is in three different amounts, depending on the number of hours that the individual served as a preceptor. This section also requires a report by the Commissioner of Revenue to the House and Senate Taxes Committees on various aspects of the credit.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. Not seeing any other comments or questions at the moment then, we will move on to our next article, which is Article 10, Department of Revenue Policy and Technical Partnership Taxes.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Arneson.
Articles 10 through 13 are the Department of Revenue Policy and Technical articles. They are exactly as this committee heard and amended them on February 24th of this year. None of the provisions have any budgetary impact. And I think I'll leave it there unless you or other members of the committee have questions.
Seeing none, then we will move on to Article 11, which is which you included with Article 10, 10 and 11.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Yep.
From Article 10 to the end of the proposal, Articles 10, 11, 12, and 13 are all the DOR policy
yep.
and technical articles.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Arneson. So, members, that's been a quick walkthrough of the articles, the high level. And before we go to Mr. Wilms for the fiscal impact, Senator Dietzig.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have another question. Kind of following up on what Senator Bach talked about on the local sales taxes, and I'm trying to find that. So we're not requiring them to list individual, so it's on page 23 of the summary, so we're striking the requirement that the ballot includes separate question for each project authorized. Can they still, I think we had a discussion before where sometimes they might have three projects. I know in one of my neighboring communities, they had two or three projects, and there was a lot of momentum for two, but not the third. And if they were not listed separately, you know, there's question on, you know, they were each listed separately, and the third question failed, but the other two went forward, or if it was two, one went forward and one didn't. But if they listed them together, there was concern that, you know, would have taken it all down before. So it strikes the requirement, but it, and again, I'm sorry if Senator Bach asked this before, is it giving them flexibility that they can still list them separately if they want, knowing that, you know, as they're discussing with the community, there might be some concern that, you know, one of them might have a little stronger and they don't want to, you know, one of them to bring down the other.
Yes, Senator Dietzig, that's a good question. We'll add Ms. Pollack for some additional comments to that. Concern. Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, Senator Dietzig, that's an important distinction. So while this provision strikes that requirement that it must be, the requirement that the each project must be contained in a separate question, it doesn't say that a city cannot do that. But perhaps it would be helpful to make that a little clear here to provide that option is still available.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. Senator Dietzig, any? Yep. And I think it will be important to just make that just a bit more clear. All right. Any further comments or questions? If you have any more questions or comments, do reach out to me right away or the staff right away. And then know that our intention is that tomorrow, we will be taking testimony and amendments on any of these. But before we do that, let's make sure we take a look at that fiscal sheet. So Mr. Wilms, if you could start us off with the Senate fiscal sheet, which should be in every member's packet. It's also online. Mr. Wilms.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. The fiscal tracking distributed in your committee materials today is titled Senate Fiscal Tracking, House File 3669, as amended by the Delete All Amendment. The top right corner shows the timestamp showing the last revised date, which was yesterday at 11 a.m. A couple things to note about the tracking. The vast majority of changes are related to the general fund. The tracking has five sections, federal conformity, revenue changes, which are the first two. Section three relates to the expenditure changes. And then section four is the non-general fund tax changes. So except for that section four, everything else is related to the general fund. In addition, I'll just make a note about the columns. Column A is labeled key. And the key thing to note about that is that for the first section related to conformity, the key lists the federal act that carried that provision, which the proposal before you is conforming to. And then past that, that column indicates the source for the provision. And in this case, there's three different sources. O stands for the omnibus that was passed in April, and kind of the early omnibus. S stands for the supplement. These are the new provisions that are included as proposed here today. And then PT defines the property tax subcommittee report. So that column A is an important sort of guide for where the source of those provisions was from. Column B shows the effective date. Note that FY22, because there's no fiscal effects in that year, is hidden. So the first shown fiscal year in this tracking document is FY23, column C. The biennium, 22-23, column D, the tails, E and F, with their biennial total in G. And then finally, column H shows the all years total, and this is the net effects of column D, the first biennium, and column G, the second biennium. So beginning in the federal conformity section, this section on pages one and part of page two show federal updates or federal changes to definitions related to individual income tax and corporate franchise tax. No changes compared to the omnibus bill that was passed in April. Line 26 shows the federal update net effects to the individual income tax. That's roughly a $68.4 million reduction in FY22-23. And then lines 28 through 44 detail the changes to the corporate franchise tax. On line 45, we can see estimated general fund revenue reduction of $26.5 million in the current biennium. Line 50 then shows the subtotal of those two sections related to the changes to the individual income tax and the corporate franchise tax. So we can see on line 50 the subtotal for the full effects of the federal conformity proposal. And in the key column, you'll note that O means that it'll total into the omnibus subtotal that appears later in the document. Moving on to section two, this is the second part of the revenue changes section. And these are all the other tax policy changes that are not related to conformity directly. We see in the first three lines, 54 through 56, those detail the lion's share of the tax revenue changes related to or included in this proposal. It includes the first bracket rate cut to 2.8% from 5.35% effective in tax year 22. Shows the 100% subtraction of Social Security beginning in tax year 22. And then line 56 details the interaction, which represents that because the Social Security income is excluded fully, the rate cut is slightly less expensive by an amount detailed on line 56. And then showing lines 57 through 68, we see these are new provisions, as detailed by my colleagues during the walkthrough. And these are new provisions. And so the code is S, and those will subtotal later. Moving on to line 69, we see the interactions related to the various provisions within the property tax omnibus. These interactions are due to the fact that the property tax subcommittee report reduced tax revenue, or excuse me, property taxes. Therefore, those amounts are no longer deductible against the individual income tax, and therefore we're showing modest increases to the general fund related to that, those loss of deductions from those tax amounts. Lines, and then we'll move on to page 3. We have changes to the corporate franchise tax, approximately a reduction of 8.23 million in FY22-23. What I will note about those three provisions is that there's also parallel amounts tracked in the individual income tax section above. So the full total would be netted on those lines, some of which are contained within the individual income tax section. The estate tax amount, that was included in the early omnibus, the spousal portability, as my colleague Ms. Pollock detailed. Line 87 through 89 shows the state property tax effects. Those were contained within the property tax subcommittee report earlier this year. And those are estimated to reduce general fund revenues by approximately $5 million in FY22-23 and $18.6 million in FY24-25. And then beginning in pay 26, the 10% phase out occurs. So the footnote details that in greater detail. Lines 92 through 96 show the various sales and use tax policy changes. The subtotal for those provisions is a reduction of $10.3 million. I'll also note here that this section mirrors the non-general fund changes. So as a result of changing the sales tax, the increment that is constitutionally dedicated to the legacy funds also sees an impact, and that's detailed in section 4 of this document. Finally, in the revenue tax section, or in the revenue section, we get to the combined net receipts, and this shows the effects of expanding the brackets and the net effects to the general fund from that. Also, on line 100, it details the additional transfer that occurs to the stadium reserve, and this is an estimated small increment of a transfer, and the reason is because the base amounts are rounded to a near to the nearest thousand, and so it shows an additional small amount going into the stadium reserve as a result of that rounding. Finally, on line 103, we have the other tax revenue changes subtotal. So these are you know, all the changes detailed here, not including conformity. We see a revenue reduction of estimated $3.3 billion in FY22-23 and an estimated revenue reduction of $5.2 billion in FY24-25. Then finally, we get to sections 105 through 108. And 105 shows the total tax revenue changes. So this includes the conformity changes and then all the additional tax policy changes that were just discussed by me. And then the subtotals also list the source of it. So you can see the subtotal by the omnibus that was passed in April, the subtotal of the supplement that's being introduced here today, and then the subtotal by the property taxes subcommittee report, which was passed by the subcommittee last week. Moving on to page 4, section 3 of the document shows all of the expenditure changes. These are spending changes, but then they're also interactions to the property tax refund, so various proposals which change the property tax liability affect state-paid refunds. So the vast majority of the property tax refunds and aids and credit section shows these PTR interactions. In this section, I won't go into detail because nothing has changed from the property tax committee's report except for line 128, which shows the PTR interaction from energy storage systems. The effective date of that was moved forward 1 year earlier. So instead of it being assessment 24, it's now 23. So now there's a small effect on PTR that's now tracked in FY25, whereas previously it was noted as being in FY26. Other than that, there's no changes to the amounts or the policies within this section as it relates to the spreadsheet. So on line 140, again, similar as before, we show the total of the expenditure changes in under this proposal, and then their source, the omnibus, which had none, the supplement, which also includes none, and it's entirely contained from the property taxes subcommittee report, as shown on line 143. Finally, we get to the line 145, and that shows the net effects of all these changes. So the revenue changes and the general fund, and the expenditure changes are netted for a net general fund effects number. And this is shown as a negative against the general fund And so the total impact is approximately $3.43 billion in FY22 and approximately $5.21 billion in FY24-25. Finally, moving on to page 5, we see section 4, which details the non-general fund tax revenue changes. As previously discussed, those were all the sales tax provisions. Section 5 then shows the non-budget items, which were detailed by my colleagues, so I won't discuss here. And then on the other side, it shows the footnotes, and these are various footnotes for if something appears or is effective, you know, in FY26 or later. It just is a little bit more context for some of those according to what's required by the budget rules. And then finally, we have the listing of the acronyms, mostly the federal acts are included there. And that concludes the walkthrough of the spreadsheet for the proposal before you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Wilms. Extremely comprehensive and amazing. Thank you for keeping track of every dollar and every use here and in categorizing so well. Members, any comments or questions on the fiscal tracking sheets? Seeing none, before we get ready to adjourn, I am going to turn it over to Ms. Pollack, who already has an answer to Senator Bach's question regarding the withholding provision. So, Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, if I understood your question correctly, you were asking whether this flat 6.25% was all-encompassing or whether there was some opt-out option. And yes, there is. If you look at page 155, at the top of the page, starting at 155.2 through 155.4, an individual receiving a payment or distribution may elect to not have that payment or distribution, the withholding apply to that. So they may make that election, which remains in effect, and they can opt out as well.
Thank you, Ms. Pollack. Senator Bach, anything further on that? I see some thinking going on there.
Well,
Senator Bach.
I'm not sure why we put a hard number in law at 6.25 and then have an opt-out provision.
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I can try to get some more information from the advocates on this, but my understanding is that the industry folks requested a flat rate withholding approach when this change was made from an opt-in to an opt-out approach, but also wanted to ensure that there was an opt-out available.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator, I think that's important. I just don't know if I'm, take one of us that has state deferred comp, and we have, pick a number, household income that puts us in the 8 or maybe the 10%, 9.85% tax bracket. And we already know that's what we're paying. And then we're gonna take some money out of our deferred compensation. And we know what our tax rate already is. And it's going on top of that. So I don't know why I wouldn't, if I'm in the 8% tax bracket and I know I'm gonna pay 8% on it, why wouldn't I just have 8% taken off?
I don't know that we have an answer at this point, but I think I think we do need to have some further discussion on that, which we can hopefully get yet today. And then as we get that discussion today, if there's clarity, of course, we'll have that option to amend as needed either tomorrow or as we go into conference committee too.
Well, I just think, Madam Chair, if somebody wants to withhold extra for whatever other reason, maybe they've had a capital gain of some kind and they got some additional tax liability. I don't know why I wouldn't allow somebody to take extra withholding on if they're taking a distribution out of their account. So I guess I'm kind of interested in that.
We will we'll get some we'll have some further discussion later to that point, Senator Bach. I think it's a relevant point, and I know we'll have room to amend or change as necessary or get the clarity that addresses that that issue. So thank you very much. Any other comments or questions? I don't see any. I know that we have a couple other things that we will be following up on. I just want to thank the Tax Committee. This is a tremendous committee. Every member here is so engaged and so knowledgeable that I think it's really important when we have these type of discussions throughout session and then as we bring them all together in this omnibus bill. So I thank all that are online today and who can be here in person as we go through this. And then just remember that tomorrow we will be meeting again. And Miss Maddie, is our time going to be at 8:30 or 9 tomorrow? 8:30. So just to be clear, we'll be here at 8:30 tomorrow morning to take up the bill officially and the delete all amendment testimony and then amending the bill. So thank you so much. Our meeting today is adjourned. Again, we will be meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, May 10th at 8:30. Have a great day.